Blog Talk Radio.
Writers, are you stuck or blocked or inspired, on a roll and tearing it up? Is your latest accomplishment publicizing your most recent bestseller, finishing the 265th revision of your first poem, or just making the commitment to writing? Well, whatever your state of mind, The Method and the Muse is the show for you. The Method and the Muse, we dig deep into an author's writing craft in one or two areas and find out what inspires them. And I'm very excited today. This month's episode features playwright Joseph Robinette, and I've already cleared it with him ahead of time that it's okay to call him Joe. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, good. Joseph Robinette, or Joe Robinette, is a Tony Award nominee and Drama Desk Award nominee for the libretto of the acclaimed A Christmas Story, the musical, one that's near and dear to most of our hearts. He is the author or co-author of 55 published plays and musicals. His works have been produced in all 50 states and in 21 foreign countries. Robinette collaborated with E.B. White on the authorized stage version of Charlotte's Web, and he wrote the musical version with Charles Strauss, who also did the version of Annie and Bye Bye Birdie. He is the recipient of the American Alliance for Theater and Education's Distinguished Play Award for Sarah Plain and Tall, and the Children's Theater Foundation of America Medallion for his body of dramatic works for family audiences in the United States and beyond. Well, welcome, Joe. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine, especially after that wonderful introduction. Thank you.
Well, you've got quite a list of accomplishments. By the way, if you look on the Method and the Muse website, you can find a link to the plays that he's written. And if you're interested in purchasing one or producing one of his plays, you can look and find that information there also. Well, today with Joe, we're going to be talking about a couple of areas that certainly he knows something about. And one of those is what's unique about writing for children. And the second area that we're going to talk about is also we're going to talk about what inspires him for the muse part. And the big one is the challenges of adapting someone's work into a play, and some of the things that come along with that. So let's start, first of all, with just a little bit about maybe why did you start writing for children, Joe?
Well, when I was in graduate school at Southern Illinois University, all of us graduate students really wanted to direct, to show our prowess as directors, and an opportunity came for me to direct a children's show, which I'd never done, and I did a children's show, and was delighted to see a lot of kids bust in and come into the theater and applaud loudly, and I went, hey, this is something a little different. So that was sort of the beginning of my interest in children's theater. And then when I graduated and was going out into the world, I was fortunate to come to a college in New Jersey here where they wanted children's theater to be developed. And so I began working in children's theater and writing for children, and have not stopped.
Yeah, not stopped certainly is true. What do you think are particular challenges that come with writing for children while at the same time appealing to the adult audience that will be attending the play with the children?
Right. Well, I think the first thing that you have to do is to approach it really professionally. I think it was Stanislavski who was once asked by a member of his troupe when they decided to do a show for young audiences. He was asked, how do we act for children? And Stanislavski said, you act for children the same way you act for adults, only better. And I think there's some truth to that. You're not pandering, you're not playing down, you treat it just as you would treat directing a Shakespearean play. You've got a message. You've got a message to get across, and the best way to do it is to do it honestly and with a lot of work and a lot of practice. So there's really not that much difference in directing and writing for children as there is for adults. Obviously, you're dealing with a much younger group than adults. But another key is to really try to keep the adults involved in the show too. And children really enjoy it when they see their parents or other adults laughing at something that they're laughing at or being moved by something that moves them. So you're really, it's not all that much difference directing and writing for children as it is for adults.
Wow. Well, I think that's very, very good advice. And I think sometimes we do tend to want to play it down and make it almost too simple. And it seems like to me, I'm a former teacher, that children can handle a lot more complicated things than you might think initially.
Absolutely. And more now than ever because of the many media that they are exposed to. And yeah, I think that one of the things that thrills me most, if I'm directing for a child audience, their parents are going to come too many times. And when I see the parents involved in the show just as much as the children, then I feel that we've done the right thing. There's a tendency sometimes with the children's theater to pander, the sets aren't quite as good, the costumes, you know, you've got to treat the whole thing very professionally, whether it's for children or for adults.
So are you saying that you don't even have to include, like, take into account, say, their attention span or something like that, or adults' attention span just as short as children's pretty much?
Well, that's true. And several shows that I have written, when we were in rehearsal, if I started getting a little bored, I said, wait a minute, this needs to be cut. We need to tighten up here. Sure, the attention span is not as great for children as it is for adults. But on the other hand, a 50-minute show or a 60-minute show can be handled by most children. Several of my shows, for example, Charlotte's Web is one, we simply have an intermission. I think in the old days, a children's show should not run more than 50 minutes was sort of the rule. But no, they can handle an hour and a half if you have an intermission, and there's no problem with that.
Wow. Well, and do you have, before we move on to a couple of other areas related, do you have any other tips for anyone who is interested in writing a play for children, anything that would help them sort of broaden their abilities in that area?
Well, I think first of all, if you're writing an original play, again, you must follow the basic rules of, you know, plot is most important, the characters come second, and so on and so forth. Write it honestly, and always keep your eye on that audience that you are writing for. You know, the thing to do is just start out and do a rough draft and try it out on a few people and go from there as you refine the play.
Mm-hmm. Do you, when you're writing, do you have a test audience of children that you try things on, or do you, how do you do that? I know I've used my grandchildren when I'm writing for children. I'll say, does this sound good? Do you actually connect up with kids to see how it plays, or how do you do that?
Well, first of all, I was fairly fortunate in that we had five children, so I started with my own, you know, reading a little, just a scene or two here or there, and they would give me some nice feedback. Generally, I would try the play out with, say, a class of mine, a children's theater class that I was teaching. I would hand out the scripts, we'd do a reading, and I would get feedback from the students themselves. A lot of time the feedback came even before the students. I would say to myself, this scene is a little too long, I tried too hard to be funny here, and so on and so forth. So I think to have a play reading, whether it's for adults or children, is very, very important. And almost every show that I did write, I would test out with an audience. Now, in a lot of cases, it wasn't a children's group that I tried it out on, but I could get pretty good feedback even from my students or even adults that I tried the show out on.
Mm-hmm. And I was kind of curious too. A lot of the people I know are write books, and they always are saying, "I wish I could see the expression on my reader's face when they're reading." Tell me a little bit about what makes writing for theater maybe a little more instant gratification for the playwright than for
well, certainly the reaction is immediate. It's live. Theater is called the liveliest art, and it certainly is. And I love sitting in an audience of a first production, let's say, whether it's one I've written or not. And you can get an awful lot from that first run through during rehearsals, it's very important to pay attention to what's going on and get that feedback not just from a trial audience but from the actors themselves. It's a collaborative art. It really is.
It really is. I'm curious if you ever sneak into one of the productions of something you've written and then go in the restroom and hear people talk about it.
Well,
get feedback from people making comments on the side.
It's interesting you should ask that question because living here in a fairly densely populated area with a lot of schools and so forth, from time to time I'll see that one of my shows is being done here, there, yonder, sometimes by an elementary school, sometimes by a professional theater. And my wife and I will often go under an assumed name. We use her maiden name to reserve the tickets, and we will go. And if we're happy with the show, we'll go back and introduce ourselves. And if I've never been two or three times when nobody knew we were there.
Yes, and I'm not going to ask you what her maiden name is because we don't want to let the cat out of the bag.
There you go, right.
that you're coming. Well, before we move on to the next part of our method section, any other last-minute pointers or anything for our writers that are writing children's plays or interested in writing children's plays?
Well, I think the main thing is to satisfy yourself first. Am I happy with the story? Am I happy with the dialogue? And just keep working until you feel good about it, and then move it on to the next step, which is with a trial audience, whether it be some people you invite in to do a reading, or whether you are able to get a class at a high school or a college to do a read through. Just keep at it until you are satisfied, and I think you'll be in good shape.
Okay, great. Well, let's shift gears just a little bit and talk a little bit about some of the challenges and rewards of adapting a much-loved, say, book into a play. And if you want to just kind of tell us just generally, and then we can kind of get into maybe a war story or two.
Okay. Well, the first thing that I do when I'm doing an adaptation, whether it be for children or for adults, I just finished doing adaptations of a couple of books by the author Debbie Maycomber, and these are adult books. But the first thing that you want to do, I think, is to do a triage. go through it, outline it scene by scene in the book, and then you say, all right, these scenes, this part of the book must be in it. That's number one. Number two is these scenes should be in it if time allows. And the third is we can do without that because if you're adapting, oh, Charlotte's Web, you know, if you read that aloud, it's probably about a 10-hour read-through, and you're trying to get it down to an hour. So, the process of adapting is very challenging, but it then is very rewarding, especially if the author liked the play. And if I may indulge myself, I have just a couple of things from Mr. White after he had read my play script. And I'll tell you what, when I sent that play script off, I think I held my breath for 3 weeks. Because, I mean, Charlotte's Web is the creme de la creme of children's literature. But anyway, here's the way he began his letter after he had read the script. Dear Mr. Robinette, I read your play script, and I like it. I'm returning it with many thanks for letting me see it. It seems to me you have handled the story very adroitly. You've kept its spirit and my intent. And when I read that, I heaved a sigh, a major sigh of relief. Then he went on and he made some suggestions, and he said, I took a few notes, say most of them are trivial, and they are offered merely as suggestions in case you find any of them worth considering, and I found them all worth considering. He goes through it, and it's just, you know, some very small things, and then he ends with this, and I have this one memorized. That's all I can offer you except my congratulations and cheers. Thank you again. Sincerely, E.B. White. That's the major audience that you're trying to please right there. And then after that come the actual audiences. I would, with most of the things that I have adapted wherein I was working perhaps with the author, I would go over what I planned to do first with the, you know, and let them know where I was headed, and then let them kind of guide me as to what they thought. And but a lot of what I've adapted, The Jungle Book, Just So Stories, and so on and so forth, the authors are no longer with us, so I can pretty much do what I wanted. But I always pretended that the author was standing behind me, even if he had been gone for 50 years. because that's the main, you are trying to serve the literature, but then you're also trying to make it stage worthy and keep it moving and keep it exciting.
Right, right. Which of the ones that you've adapted like that were the most challenging, because maybe the nature of the book made it a little hard to put on the stage? Were there any that were particularly difficult?
Yeah, I would say that Sarah Plain and Tall was challenging. They're all challenging, but when you have a book where there are many different locales, then you have to keep the show moving, and also you have to do it in such a way that you don't have to have 13 sets changes during the show. So that's one of the things. I think one of the shows that I've written. Let's see. Well, taking the Aesop fables and making that into a musical, how do you do that? Well, my idea was to create a fable factory, and a young boy comes in and discovers it, and there's the seven characters who range from the the plot, Pluto the plotter, Gretel the grammar guardian, and other alliterative names throughout. And this, and what's happened here is that they have lost their moral maker. And this young boy, whose name just happens to be Monroe, comes in and he learns the craft of storytelling and story making, and he becomes the moral maker for the Fabulous Fable Factory. Things like that, you know, they at first they seem to be kind of domineering. Oh boy, well, how do I do this? One time I got a call from the publisher who said, hey, do you take the New Yorker? And I said, yeah. And he said, look at that cartoon on page 57, whatever. And there's two girls. One's obviously Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, and the other's Alice from Alice in Wonderland. And Alice is saying to Dorothy, I just love your shoes. And Dorothy says, it's a long story. I'll tell you about it sometime. That was the cartoon. Well, that turned into be both a musical and a play, Dorothy Meets Alice or The Wizard of Wonderland. And so I took those two girls and their coterie and mixed them up and went forward with it, and that turned out to be, you know, a pretty successful show. So ideas can come really from anywhere, and when I get an idea for a play or an idea for a musical, I just toss it into a box, and then at some point I reach in and pull something out and say, hey, why don't we do this one?
Why don't we do this one? Yeah. Well, while we're saying that, why don't we do this one, I'm going to ask you a question that may be kind of out of left field, but if you could have any book that you could adapt into a play with the author's blessing, what book would you choose that you haven't already done?
Right,
you have one
right. Well, I would say staying with children's theater, which is sort of my milieu, even though I write for adults as well. I think any book that Dr. Seuss has written that has not been made into a drama, and I'm not sure many, if any, have been. Now, they did do a musical called Seussical the Musical, but I just love Dr. Seuss, as most of the world does, and I would love to do Bartholomew and the Oobleck. It's just a great book, and so I would say any Dr. Seuss book. And what I'm going to do is, I think, is to go to my publisher and see if they can get the rights, if they are available for that.
That would be fabulous. That would be absolutely wonderful. Well, I did want you to, if you can take a moment to tell us about A Christmas Story, which, much like Charlotte's Web, is near and dear to many people's hearts. And do you have anything about that you want to share? I think it's now being produced around the country. It's not, I don't know if it's still on Broadway, but it's being produced everywhere around. What's going on with that?
Well, that's exactly what's going on with it. because it's a seasonal piece, when it got to Broadway, the idea was that they would run it for a couple of months, and the producers were willing to lose money on it because you can't run a Broadway show for 2 months and come out ahead. But what they wanted to do was to be able to say, this show has been done on Broadway, and they were, you know, praying for good reviews, which fortunately we got. And then that was the first year in New York. The second year, it was done at Madison Square Garden. And so then the publisher put it together, and it is now available for any group that wants to do it. Now, if it's being done by a big theater, for example, in Philadelphia, they're going to be doing it at the Walnut Street Theater, and there's a kind of a 50-mile blackout, so that if a high school within 50 miles of Walnut Street Theater wanted to do it, they would have to wait until nobody in Philadelphia is doing it, for example, no professional theater. But, yeah, it's I think there are about 35 to 40 productions of it that are scheduled for this year. Some are, you know, very short runs, like two weekends, and then like the one in Philadelphia will run for a couple of months.
Great. Well, and I also was wondering, while we have a little time left, we have about 5 minutes, 4 minutes. What's on the horizon for you right now? What's in the works?
Well, as I mentioned, Debbie Maycomber, who has written lots and lots of books and has been on the New York Times bestseller, I was fortunate that the Dramatic Publishing Company in Illinois, which is my publisher, they got permission to take a couple of her books to be adapted for the stage, and they asked me to do it. And once again, happily, Debbie Maycomber was very pleased with it, and so those are now available through the publishing company. But we're taking one of the two shows, one of the two plays, and turning it into a musical. I'm doing it with a fellow in New York. His name is Tom Tierney. He and I have written four musicals together. So that's the thing I'm working on right now.
Is there anything about writing a play that also is going to be a musical that makes it particularly difficult or enjoyable or different?
Well, you mean when you take a play and make it into a musical?
Yes. Yeah. Or a book and make it into a musical. Yes.
Right. Yeah. That process is a little bit complicated. You go through and you say, okay, where do we hear music? And if we're going to have 45 minutes of music in this hour and a half show, then we're going to have to cut back some of the show. So it's primarily a thing of editing, and also trying to get a good mix of musical numbers, all the way from solo performances to chorus doing a number. So it is a challenge, but about four or five of my plays have been made into musicals. So that process, while a bit difficult, is very rewarding when it works.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, I'm really excited about your latest endeavors, and look forward to seeing A Christmas Story on a theater somewhere nearby, hopefully.
Good. I hope so.
Yeah, that is great. One other quick thing I did want to say, are there any writers that inspire you particularly or have inspired you over the years to make you want to be a writer? Do you have a favorite author or anyone that has been like your inspiration?
Well, I think it won't surprise you for me to say that I've always very much admired Tennessee Williams and Arthur Miller. They are the vanguards of playwrights, but I also admire the work of Neil Simon, who, by the way, came to see A Christmas Story, the musical, and was very complimentary about it. And that was a highlight of that run on Broadway for Neil Simon to like the thing, you know.
That's wonderful. Well, I want to thank you, Joe, so much. Joseph Robinette is a very well-deserved and awarded playwright who has adapted many books into children's theory. He also writes for adults and has a lot of interesting projects. You want to be sure and check out www.writersonlinenetwork.com and go to the Method and the Muse page, and you will find a link to Joe Robinette's plays. And also, I just want to thank everyone for joining us, The Method and the Muse. We will be back next month. We're always the third Monday, 5 o'clock Central Time. And please check out writersonlinenetwork.com and find out what you can do with the network around you. Thank you so much for joining us. And, Joe, I just keep on writing. I can't wait to see what you've got coming down the pike next.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to be on your program. And I'm flattered and honored to have had this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Bye,
okay.
Everyone.